Hey, I'm just letting you know that in February 2023, I am speaking at my friend Andy Storch's event in Sonoma, California. It's called the Talent Development Think Tank. I'll be running a session on marketing your workshops. And on day three, I'll be hosting the 2-hour workshop blueprint session. I'd love to see you there. Head on over to leannehughes.com/thinktank. Enjoy the episode. Coming up next on Leanne Hughes's Work and Live Large.
You know, whether it's implementing a strategic change or an organizational change, or whether it's, you know, you've got a strategic objective coming down from executive and you go, okay, cool, we've got to implement this. If you haven't thought about and can't clearly articulate what it means for your team and what your team is trying to achieve, and you haven't thought about the plan or the process, then you can't communicate it.
Life's too short, so you're here to work and live large. Here's your host with nothing to lose, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, a consultant who partners with bold leaders to build performance. And on this show, I help you imagine what's possible is possible for you. The focus for today's conversation is leadership and the power of coaching. And my guest today shares that a lot of the popular rhetoric related to coaching tries to teach leaders to be executive coaches. He disagrees and says that coaching is an essential skill that you can bring in anytime. Now, if you like memorable one-liners that you can share with your team, you'll love today's episode because my guest, as he shares himself, can throw in quotes all day long. I'm thrilled to share today's conversation with you with my guest, Clifford Morgan. Clifford is an endorsed organizational psychologist and leadership expert with over 15 years of service with the Royal Australian Air Force. During this time, he has trained hundreds of leaders to use coaching skills to develop people and lead more effectively. As a coach, Clifford has worked with CEOs, military commanders, government executives, and business and community leaders across a wide variety of industries. As you'll hear from this conversation, Cliff's love of leadership occurred quite early in life, reading John Maxwell books. And we kick off this conversation by, I guess I was really curious, digging into Clifford's experience in Iraq and how that really shapes his perspective on work and life. This conversation, it is wide-ranging. We riff on Cliff's new book, The Coaching Leader, the importance of having and creating fun at work, having clarity in your message, and so much more. I have no doubt you'll enjoy and learn a lot from this one, and I encourage you to connect with Clifford on LinkedIn and check out his website, cliffordmorgan.com.au, and his new book, The Coaching Leader, is out right now. Links in the show notes for everything mentioned are over at podcast.leannehughes.com. Enjoy the episode. I'm thrilled to welcome onto the show Clifford Morgan. Clifford, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Leanne, for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great. And we met in person in Brisbane, and it's nice to be reconnecting over this podcast interview to celebrate the launch of your new book, The Coaching Leader. But before we talk about the book and the work that you do, I'm always curious, and I don't really know your backstory. I've read a bit about it in the book, but you can you share with myself and with listeners a bit about your story and maybe some of the career pivots that took you to where you are today?
Yeah, certainly. So I have a background in the military. Even if we're talking about pivots, I guess before then, I left school and I was training to be a high school history and drama teacher, but kind of got sick at uni. There was a couple of things that didn't really sit well with me. And so I thought I'll take 12 months off and I'll go and do some time in the Air Force do my training in the Air Force and then kind of continue after that 12 months as a reservist and go back and finish my uni. And 5.5 years later, I was still there, up for promotion and posting. And so I started my time in the Air Force as an airfield defense guard. So it's basically infantry skill set, but defending air bases. And so I had a lot of fun there, you know, deployed to Iraq and did a whole bunch of different things. And but it was always going to be a temporary thing for me. So I decided to put my discharge in and I guess take a real pivot and do something completely different. I didn't know what that was at the time, but I ended up studying psychology. So that was then an 8-year journey to go from starting my studies to becoming a fully endorsed organizational psychologist. And now I have been spending the last 6 years consulting in that space, so applying psychology in the workplace working with strategy leaders and teams, really trying to help leaders get the most out of their people and their businesses at work. And so that's kind of my story, executive summary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, there's so many. That was a really good executive summary. I think you contained it really nicely. So, I mean, what I found, I kind of laughed. You said it was so much fun, and then I was deployed in Iraq. Like, I've never heard those two sentences woven together. What was your experience like in Iraq? I've got to ask. I'm really curious.
Yeah. So, look, I had a whole lot of fun in the Air Force. Over my career, I wouldn't necessarily describe my deployment to Iraq as fun, but at the same time, it was a really valuable experience to have. And so it was very interesting. Got to see a whole other world. Got to interact with Americans and some of the other different nationalities and that sort of thing, and definitely gave you a very different perspective on things, right? It gives you, I often talk about the frame of reference that you have, and it gives you a very looking at it, because I was doing security for the Australian Embassy right in the middle of what we call the green zone in Baghdad, and so therefore it was kind of like you had all these checkpoints and everything around, and the green zone was the safe place. That was where all the different embassies had all their, all the different nations had their embassies and all that sort of stuff. So that's where all the important people were. And some of the local contractors that were doing some work at the Australian Embassy, it would take them 3 hours to get through all the checkpoints to get to work, and then 3 hours to get back home. We were there at a pretty turbulent time in the sense that there was a lot of what we call indirect fire, IDF, just people lobbing rockets into the green zone, and there were IEDs going off and that sort of thing. And so one of the contractors, we came through and I was searching him one time, and he's like, oh, and you can tell he was in quite a lot of pain. He's like, oh mate, what's going on? He's like, I got hit by an IED on the way home last night, and the next day he's coming back to work, and so you kind of your frame of reference to what is hard, what is difficult, what is what people go through shifts, right? And so a lot of people complain about certain things, and part of that, I've got an office here, and probably half this office space was where four of us lived for 7 months, where we slept, and it was kind of on bunk beds, and you had this much room between bunk beds type thing, and that was your room.
Yeah.
And so when people complain about not getting some of the comforts and things like that, I have to hold my tongue, and it's like, not everybody's had your experience, but my frame of reference for what is hard and the perspective that I bring was very, very much shifted during my deployment in Iraq.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, and you sort of go through that experience. I mean, in pop culture, we talk about the first world problem and kind of have a joke about it. But you're just sharing that. Wow, I actually went through this experience, and I geek out. There's a YouTuber called Bald and Bankrupt, and on his most recent YouTube adventure, he went to Afghanistan for 7 days, and when he actually flew out of Afghanistan, he said, I didn't realize how tense I was until we're on that plane leaving. Just that constant. Is that how you felt over there? And we'll get to leadership in a moment, but this is so interesting.
I guess it ebbed and flowed through different parts. So I mentioned all the IDF that was coming in, and that was very much kind of the first half of the deployment. There was a lot of that. There was a lot of kind of work that got done by different multinational militaries in the kind of the middle of my deployment, which meant that a lot of that stopped. And so the back end was much more relaxed, I guess, because we weren't, getting the air sirens going off all the time. But, I probably the most scared I was in that thing, I was actually visiting the British Embassy. We were having a game of volleyball and the sirens went off. And so we all had to hit the deck. And none of us actually had our body armor on at that point. And we weren't under any cover per se. We're kind of out in the middle of volleyball court. And we could just hear the rockets coming closer and closer and closer. I was just like, I'm in a pretty vulnerable position here. Now, you know, everything was all good, but at the same time, you're just kind of like, you know, that's probably when I was the most tense.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah, you really painted a picture of that experience. I was sort of holding my breath there. I mean, I can imagine how scary that would have been. So you've come back to Australia. You spent 8 years now studying your degree. And for the last 6 years, you've been working as a consultant. As I was reading through your book, it sounds like you've just packaged all the sort of the key lessons that you share with leaders into one book that has like the go-to chapters and resources. Can you share the driver for writing this book and who it's really for?
Yeah, look, so I spent a lot of my time obviously doing executive coaching, right, and coaching leaders, but I also spent a lot of time, equipping leaders with coaching skills. And I think, you know, a lot of the training and books and things out there that I read on kind of the leader as coach, I guess is the common term that you hear, are often geared towards, you know, trying to make the leader an executive coach, whereas I'm kind of like, well, you know, we need leaders to be leaders. We don't want to stack our companies full of executive coaches because there's a whole lot of necessary stuff that wouldn't be done. There's decisions that wouldn't be made and people would be so focused on developing people that they wouldn't actually give the direction that's needed for, you know, a company to move forward. So what I've tried to do here, you know, I'm a big believer that anything you do as a leader, if you use coaching skills, you can enhance the outcome that you get, either if that's for yourself and you're self-coaching yourself through the process of whatever the task is, whether it's making a decision or, you know, preparing and, you know, writing vision, whatever it is, or if you want to use that with other people, you're essentially turning that task into a development opportunity for your people, right? It's an everyday task. You don't have to take them offline. You don't actually want to send them away. And it's really interesting when you look at some of the research around kind of millennials and Gen Z and those coming through behind, they actually want up to 50% more development in their workplace, but they don't actually necessarily, there's a particular type of development they want. They don't necessarily want to be sent on a 2-week course. They want that development to come from their immediate supervisor, from their direct manager or leader. So essentially they want to be coached, right? What I've tried to do with this book is say, hey, here's a bunch of skills that you can apply as a leader. These are the skills that I would use if I was coaching, but they're not necessarily, don't necessarily think that you have to sit down and have a full-on one-on-one formal coaching conversation. It just might be asking, you know, one or two questions as you're talking about, you know, whatever the task is. And, you know, a classic one I think of is it's a law firm actually that I'm running. So this book kind of goes with a program that I run called the Coaching Leader Program. So I'm running a law firm, the partners of a law firm through that program at the moment. And particularly when the partners are working with the junior lawyers who just don't have the experience, they're encountering something new for the first time, that it has to be much more of a teaching kind of moment rather than a coaching thing, trying to just ask them questions and drawing them out. And so what I'm trying to encourage them is like, use the coaching skills to enhance the teaching that you're doing. And so you might ask one or two questions at the front end and get them thinking a bit more in a different way. You do your teaching component. And then at the back end, you ask some more coaching questions and say, okay, so what are you going to do about that? And what was the most valuable lesson that you learned through that whole conversation that we just had? And that way you're actually enhancing the experience for the junior lawyer. And so, you know, it's kind of like, here's a bunch of skills in the book. Don't be an executive coach, but use these skills to be a better leader.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think because, and you also allude to in the book, like the word coaching can be misconstrued. We think of sports coaches that tell you what to do. The executive coach, we think, yeah, we have to sit you down for an hour and it's so serious and focused. And so the beauty of coaching is that it's something that it's like a way of working. And you just talked to me before about the situational leadership deciding when you're sort of going into the teaching mode and how to evaluate that. And I love that you say kind of priming them using questions up front to see where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So because I talk about when you ask a question, you force your people to think, right? And so if we've got smart people in our organization, so when they think, they're going to have insight. If you're just consistently telling them what to do, they're kind of in passive receive mode and they're not really engaged in the process. So the learning is going to be not as great. Whereas if you're right at the front end, you're asking them questions, they actually start thinking and engaging. And then you move into whether it's teaching or directing or delegating, whatever the task is. But they're already engaged in the process. So they're going to remember more. They're going to take more ownership over it. They're going to be more motivated. There's a whole lot of neuroscience and chemicals and stuff that happen when you ask questions, facilitate insight as well. All that comes into a play. And so it just makes the overall outcome for the staff member, the leader and the company a whole lot more better.
Yeah, and it really takes the pressure off. I remember when I was a first-time leader, gosh, how many years ago? I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. No, I'm not dating myself that much, but I would have these like Monday morning meetings and like I had my small little team and I'm going, oh, we'll meet outside. But basically I was running them through all the updates in the agenda and the last section was any questions. Oh my gosh. And so, you know, all I needed to do was really shift that up front and like just be inclusive and ask questions and make it participatory. But I think I had no sort of background then. I didn't know what I know now. I felt like to be professional, to be a leader, I had to know it all. So it is an interesting contrast. Yeah.
And look, that's one of the things. I just gave a keynote last week where I was talking about navigating the pressure of modern day leadership. And one of the pressures that leaders face is to know it all, right? Everything's changing and everybody comes to you for the answers. So you're expected to stay up to date with everything and that's kind of impossible, right? And you're expected to know what the right answer is all the time. But if you use coaching skills and get them to kind of figure out what it is they need to do to move forward, it actually takes the pressure off you as a leader. And obviously we've spoken about all the benefits it has for your people, but it also has a whole lot of benefits for you. And you kind of got a whole lot more headspace to then invest that into whatever it is that's most important at the time.
Yeah. And look, Clifford, you mentioned neuroscience just earlier. And I actually love it in your book you wrote, because you're talking about the left brain and the right brain. And then you mentioned, you had a disclaimer after that, which I thought was really good. Because you come from an organizational psychology background, can you share that with listeners, that insight?
Yeah, so there's a part in the book where I talk about coaching has the potential to engage both sides of the brains, right? And so typically we think about the left side of the brain being, very analytical and the numbers based and systems and processes and logical and reason and all that sort of thing, whereas the right side we associate with creativity. And by asking questions, a lot of people will sort of say, well, I'm analytical, I have a bias to using the left side of the brain, or I'm creative, I have a bias to using that. And by asking questions, what you can do is get them to think or engage the opposite side of the brain, or more creative. But I guess that the disclaimer that I put in the book is that, whenever we think, whenever we are actually using both sides, or we never actually use solely one side of the brain. And whenever we're doing analytical processing, we are actually engaging the creative side as well. But for simplicity and helping people understand what the point that I'm trying to make, you kind of explain it in left and rights.
Yeah, no, that's I chuckled because I'm like, because the thing that I guess there's experts out there that say, oh, it's one or the other, and then I guess there's problems when you actually then create that label and then you put yourself in a container and you can't see that there's actual nuances, frameworks, and things like that. So it was good.
Yeah,
good to see you write that. Another thing that you wrote that you share in the book is this is again a few years ago. I was running some leadership development. And I remember we were just going through, remember that? It's like an old chestnut model, Eisenhower's the important versus urgent.
Yeah. Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
So I know it and I think everyone knows it. But what surprised me was that a lot of groups had never seen this model before. And you allude to the same thing with the SMART framework. Yes. And SMART, I know the SMART framework underpins a ton of performance development across many organizations, yet leaders don't have the confidence to set their own goals using that framework. Yeah, can you share some insight on that and why you brought it into the book in terms of we think everyone knows about it, it's used all the time, but yet the utility isn't optimized?
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm still amazed, I guess. So, I mean, I think SMART goals, I think I was a teenager when I learned about that for the first time. And I guess, you know, when you're in the world and doing the work that you and I do, we kind of just take for granted. But I constantly have to remind myself what one of my old psychology supervisors, Dr. Mike Allen, who's an amazing psych, he said, you got to remember that what's obvious to you is not obvious to everybody else. And that is something that I will continually, you know, over the years remind myself, I'll continually do it, you know, into the future. And so, yes, it is quite obvious. A lot of people have seen it, but I'm amazed at how many people, when I'm running workshops and coaching skills workshops, I'm talking about that. And it's not uncommon for half the room to say, I've never heard of that before. Yeah. And so again, it's, you know, it is just kind of putting it out there and saying, well, hey, here is the benefits of actually, you know, going through the process. I guess the principle that underpins all the work that I do is, unless you can clearly articulate it, you can't be intentional about actioning it. And I challenge people.
Say that again.
Unless you can clearly articulate it,
yep,
you can't be intentional about actioning it. And I challenge people, find an area of your life where that does not apply, because I'm yet to discover one, and nobody else has been able to think. Unless you can clearly articulate what you want to achieve, then you can't be intentional about, one, chasing it, two, developing a plan, mm-hmm, to actually going after it. Mm-hmm. And so... The SMART goal process really does just help you clearly articulate. It's a nice, easy framework that helps you clearly articulate what it is you want to achieve, which means the process of developing a plan to go and execute and actually chase after it becomes a whole lot easier. And that's one of the things about coaching, right, is we're asking a whole lot of questions to help people identify what they want to achieve. What they want, you know, the number of coaching sessions, you know, and you just literally go, okay, cool. You spoke to me about the scenario and the problem that you're facing. What do you want? And you just get this blank stare, you know, and people haven't taken the time to sit there and articulate to themselves, let alone to anyone else, what it is, what's the outcome that they're after? What's the goal they want to achieve? And from a leadership perspective, that becomes so important as well. And, you know, if you're trying to lead your team, you know, whether it's implementing a strategic change or an organizational change, or whether it's, you know, you've got a strategic objective coming down from executive and you go, okay, cool, we've got to implement this. If you haven't thought about and can't clearly articulate what it means for your team and what your team is trying to achieve, and you haven't thought about the plan or the process, then you can't communicate it. And so your team's going to be sitting there going, okay, that's cool, but I'm totally confused. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do, because you haven't clearly articulated to them what they need to achieve, how they're going to achieve it, and what the outcome is thereafter. So, SMART goals, just, you know, again, there's some neuroscience and stuff behind that that's in the book as well. But it's really the purpose there is help people to clearly articulate it so they can be intentional about action.
Yeah. I've got two sort of quotes that spring to mind. Donald Miller, his podcast, I think old podcast was called Story Brand, but he talks about, his tagline for that is, if you confuse, you'll lose. I'm like, okay, that makes it very punchy. And then the second one is related to your point around intention is the best way to learn something is to teach someone else. So the best way to... So before you even go there with like sharing what the plan or the strategy is, like get it clear in your own mind. And it's funny, like I feel like I do a lot of work on building self-awareness. You talk about the GROW model in your book. I'll use that on myself. I'll interrupt myself, because what I tend to find, even with the teams that I serve, but also myself, is I'm busy, but it's like busy towards what? And that's when decision-making for me will slow down, because I'm like, do I do this or that? Because I don't have that sort of idea of where I'm meant to go, or where teams need to go. So, we'll just leave that point there.
I didn't need anything added to it. That's right.
We'll gift tie that. What I like in your book as well is you talk about coaching not only in the workplace, but outside of work as well. And you got the 5F framework. And we spoke about fun right at the beginning, and you've drawn that into the framework. Can you share why fun is an essential ingredient for you and for the leaders that you work with?
Oh, look, life is there to be enjoyed, not endured, right? Mm. And so we can, I'm just trying to think of the quote. There's a great quote, and I can't remember the thing, but essentially the thrust of it is that the amount of work that you need to do or the things that you need to achieve is the same, right? You can either do it in a way that you enjoy it or you can do it in a way that you don't. And why would you choose not to, to not have fun, really, right? Yeah. So it's one of those things. But the thing is that you've got to be intentional about it, right? Yeah. If you aren't, you're just focused on what you're trying to achieve, whether that's in the workplace, whether that's at home, whether that's, with your kids and trying to teach them something. If you're so focused on them achieving or the goal, I guess, and not intentional about enjoying the process, then you'll be miserable. You'll achieve a whole lot, and you might have a meaningful life in terms of you've got a legacy of achievements, but it won't be meaningful in terms of the experience that you've had and the experience that other people have had when they interact with you. And so particularly as a parent, I'm a pretty goal-driven guy, right? We've spoken a lot about goals and achievement and all that sort of stuff here today. So that's a big part of who I am. And I've really kind of, with my two young girls, had to temper that and learn how to not get so focused on them achieving whatever it is. The classic was riding a bike with my oldest daughter, and because I'm a dad, right? It's like the dad gets to teach the kid how to ride a bike, and then I'm trying to be as soft as possible, but I'm an ex-military guy, and sometimes that plays in as well. And she did not have a fun time the first couple of times, and so therefore she just didn't want to ride a bike, and so I found that really difficult. And it ended up taking her. And the other thing is, I knew she could do it if she just focused and stuck, like well within her capabilities. But because she hadn't enjoyed the process at the beginning, she wasn't willing to engage in the process, repeatedly to learn. And so it took her probably, another 2 years more than what it could have. Mm-hmm. And it was the same day that my four-year-old started riding without training wheels as it did my seven-year-old. Nothing wrong with that, but that's just the consequence, I guess, of me not enjoying the process at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes with leadership, right? Mm-hmm. If you are so hard or you're driving your team too hard and you're not having fun in the process, you're not engaging them, they're not enjoying being at work, then they're going to kind of disengage. They're not going to want to necessarily come to work with you. Yes, they'll go, yeah, that's awesome. We achieve a massive result. But, we're all worked to the bone and we're all burnt out and we're all, so fun's really important. And I guess the other piece is that it helps you recover from work. And a lot of that's, the research and the science, I guess, when we start talking about work-life wellbeing and that sort of thing is, moving away from kind of establishing boundaries and doing all those sort of things, but what are the activities that help you recover from work? And that, science says if you need detachment, so you need to be able to switch your mind off, you need to be able to relax, and that's more about kind of your parasympathetic nervous system and returning your body to, a neutral state, and you need to have a sense of mastery. And if you can get those three things, activities that give you those three things, then you're going to recover from work and you're going to come back the next day with a whole lot more energy. Mm. So if you can think about something that's fun, if you're, having fun doing it, you're going to be switching off. You're not going to be thinking about work because you're going to be engaged in what you're doing. And if that activity then has, whether it's a skill progression, whether it's a hobby, whether it's exercise, whatever it is. So you're right into your cycling, and I assume that you overall, you find cycling fun, right? It's hard work.
Yeah. Well, Peloton have made it really fun for me. I didn't like outdoor cycling, but I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there, when you jump on that, right, you're not thinking about work for the most part, right? The great thing about exercise is what it is, flushes the body. So that post exercise, when you get your endorphins, that sort of thing, you've flushed out a lot of the cortisone, adrenaline, noradrenaline, all those stress chemicals, and so your body post exercise is in a relaxed state, and a sense of mastery. Right, you get to your times get better, and so exercise is one of those great things, particularly when you enjoy it. It hits all three categories, and therefore, you recover from your workday, and you go back to work, and you got all this energy. It's easier for you to focus and all that sort of stuff. So, I don't know if that went down a bit of a rabbit hole for you.
There's two sort of points here I want to go to. I guess the first is absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with the fun element and the detachment part. So, something like my hack. When I have to do something that I don't necessarily enjoy, but it, there's things in life and work that we have to do that, right? Yep. Sometimes you can't outsource. So I'll just, because I am, I don't think I'm not competitive against other people, but against myself. And I love deadlines. So I'll just throw on timers and be like, all right, Leanne, can you get this done within the 20 minutes? And it contains the experience. So then I'll go work hard as opposed to just letting it. So that's my way of making it fun. I know other people wouldn't relate to
that.
It's
like a game, right?
Yeah, it's a game.
It's like
you're right, gamifying.
We're on a game. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And the other, I mean, this is back to your point about the bike riding. And you said, okay, I looked at my daughter and I knew that she has that potential to ride. I just want to extrapolate that. So I have like awesome friends, great people that I work with. Even my husband, like the skills that we learn here, we apply to every sort of conversation. And when I see potential in people and they don't see it in themselves, I like want to just grab them and shake them and go, you're so much better. You could do. But it's hard to, I can't do that. I'm learned not to do that. But how do you, any ideas on navigating that? Cause it's like, it's hard when you see potential that people don't see in themselves.
Yeah. Look, there's no easy answer, Leanne, because it's something that I struggle with as well. And I think where I can get really frustrated when I'm in an organizational setting and I see the leader, I see so much potential in the leader, and they're kind of, it's almost like they're intentionally or actively moving away from their potential.
Sabotaging them, yeah.
Yeah, cutting the knees out from underneath them. But I it really grates me when the actions of the leader then undercut the potential of their team, right, and the other people in the organization. And when I start talking about the purpose around what I do, why I do what I do, it's very much because, I've seen good leadership and I've seen bad leadership. I've worked with leaders that I'd gladly follow into battle and take a bullet for. There's other leaders I'd gladly throw a grenade under their bed while they slept, right? But I've seen the destructive nature of poor leadership, and it gets perpetuated, right? Because particularly when people don't know what good looks like and all they've experienced is poor leadership, then they just replicate that. And because there's some old statistics now, but I reckon that the thrust of them are probably true, is that the majority of people, it takes 10 years for them between their first supervisory responsibilities to when they get proper leadership training. That's a decade of kind of figure out what am I doing, right? And so if in the absence of decent leadership training, what do? Well, they look to the people, the other leaders around them. If they're surrounded by poor leaders, then they just replicate and perpetuate that poor leadership. And so I kind of, I say that I war against the perpetuation of poor leadership at work.
That's awesome. I love that. Is that a LinkedIn tagline? That's fantastic.
Yeah. I use it when I speak more than, I haven't necessarily written it down, but yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember I was in Mongolia and there was a leader. I think he was like a 58-year-old superintendent in Mongolia underground mining. First leadership experience. He's like, I wish I'd learned this when I was 25.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 years, unreal. Okay, I mean, that was, because I do find it interesting, like, the amount of incredible thought leadership books on leadership, yet Gallup tells us different stats in terms of the engagement of employees. It's so interesting. So,
I'd like to think, I mean, those numbers are, it is some slightly old research, and I'd like to think that in the last, couple of years, that with the amount of resources around and kind of cheaper, small bite-sized offerings and that sort of thing, people are getting more exposure. But I think that the thrust or the theme behind that is the same, in that there's a lot of people get promoted, they don't get trained, and there's a long time between when they do get training and when they start having those leadership responsibilities, and they're just trying to figure it out.
Oh, yeah. I remember the mess I made in my first 6 months. It was like, and that was 6 months. And not even a big team. But, yeah, so interesting replaying that. Clifford, we'll move to the rapid round now. So these are questions we ask every guest that appears on the show. What is a book that has helped shape the way that you think?
Look, so hard, Leanne, because there's so many. I've got like a bookshelf over there stacked with them, right? And there's so many. I'm just looking across there. There's so many good titles. Probably, if I was to throw one out there, as a teenager, I read a lot of John Maxwell. And so 21 Laws of Irrefutable Laws of Leadership and any of his books are absolutely brilliant. He's an amazing communicator. And I think while I was always interested in leadership, that really sparked for me the pursuing of kind of educating myself on leadership and that sort of thing. And then, so many since then. And now I've got one to add to the mix as well.
Yeah, I know. Congratulations. we haven't even talked about like your process writing it, but that's incredible that you've done this. And so well done to you. And when is your book released, Clifford?
So the book launch is on the 10th of November. But yeah, it's available on Amazon now, and you can purchase it through the website. You can buy it now.
Yeah, cool. This episode will be out post November, so it'll be live. So congrats to you on that. Before I move to the next question, interesting point around you and John Maxwell and leadership. Because I read like the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teams. So I'm just obsessed with personal self-development and growth. So it's really interesting how the books that we read when we were younger have helped influence and shape who we are.
Very much so. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite app or a tool that you would recommend?
I try not to use my phone and that sort of thing as much as possible. There'll be some days it'll be 10 o'clock before I look at my phone. I'll keep it in my office and I go and do my thing and come back. So I try not to be reliant on any, but probably the one that I find, most useful, not necessarily the one I use the most, but one of the most useful, is probably just the Garmin one. I've got a Garmin watch, which I picked up when I was training for my marathon a couple of years ago. And so just tracking your sleep and how many steps you got and all that sort of stuff is a really good reminder. It's like, hey, your average is now under 6 hours a night and you need to, and luckily that hasn't been the case too much lately, which is good.
Yeah, so, those sleep stats are scary. Like you think, oh, but I've been in bed for 8 hours. And it's like, no, you've actually been asleep for 4. It's like, oh, no.
The scary thing is, right, I know all the psychology behind, lack of sleep and, why there's a reason why we sleep deprivation is a torture method. So, don't torture yourself.
Yeah, but you're right. The more you know about it, then the more you sort of fear it when you're trying to go to sleep. And I know about it as well. Like all this, cause I listen to a lot of podcasts about sleep and you're like, I don't want to know all this. I want to be quite ignorant so I can just nod off. Hey, what is a song that gets you fired up?
To be honest, I'm not a massive music person, but I am ex-Air Force. So Highway to the Danger Zone.
I was going to say.
Top Gun, riding motorbikes. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so happy when he opened Maverick with that song. That was awesome.
I thought they did a really good job with that second film.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I'd love to see it again in the cinema. Hey, Clifford, do you have a favourite quote?
Anyone that knows me knows that I've got a quote for everything, so it's hard for me to pick one. I'll probably... I'll throw a couple of John Maxwell quotes out there. Everything rises and falls on leadership. And I think that the more that I get in and teach and train leadership and all that sort of stuff, the more I believe that quote. The other one that he talks about that I use often is reflection turns experience into insight. It's so when we reflect on our experience, we're able to identify the insights and learn the lessons from that experience so we can then take them forward and apply them. If we don't do that, then, you know, we're just going to repeat the same mistakes over and over and we never learn. So,
yeah, it's like I need to pause time sometimes after something's happened, just pause it, reflect for 5 minutes and then press play on life again. Because I feel like something will happen and I'll move on to the next thing and forget about it. But you're so right, that reflection piece.
And that's one of the disciplines of high performance, right, is that they take the time, they prioritize doing that, whether that's throughout the day or whether that's taking 10 minutes at the end of the day to reflect on their day and their journal and do all those sort of things. But that reflection time is really important.
Yeah, I agree. And I think even that journaling piece at the end, I've started to do that, not very consistently, but a lot more than I did previously. But I think that does help with sleep as well, because you sort of, rather than closing your eyes and thinking about the day, you've written it down, it's parked, you move on with your life.
Yep.
Amazing. Hey, Clifford, congrats on the book again. If our listeners would like to contact you, find out more about the work that you do, where should we send them?
Yeah, look, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so you can track me down there and connect with me. Otherwise, the website is, cliffordmorgan.com.au, and you can both order the book through there and also send me a message through there. But that's probably the easiest ways.
Awesome. We'll put a link to those in the show notes. Great to reconnect with you, Clifford. All the best for your book launch and for the rest of your year and beyond.
Yeah. Thanks, Leanne. We appreciate the opportunity. It's been fun.
You're the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to Work and Live Large. I really appreciate you. If you know someone in your network and you think, oh my gosh, they've got so much potential, like I want them to live and work larger, send them this episode. I think they might appreciate it. I also appreciate hearing from you, your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, anything. You can shoot me an email, hello@leannehughes.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search for Leanne Hughes. Stay up to date with all the episodes by heading on over to leannehughes.com/subscribe, and all the best with your week as you go around living it up.